What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. My name is Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
We're coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. This is episode number 105, and today we are going to be smoking and talking all about the upcoming UFC 264, Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier 3. We're going to talk about the UFC heavyweight title mess that Dana White has gone and created. We're going to recap BKFC 18 and discuss the Pacquiao-Spence boxing match that was announced as well. But you know what's next. Before we dive into all that, grab your weed, fire it up, and let's dive into the weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
All right, folks, this week we are smoking on one kind of flower and one kind of wax, or two kinds of wax, excuse me. As you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, Paul is hitting the Puffco right there, for which we've got some, Paul? Tropicana cookies, wax, and some Girl Scout cookies shatter. It's the same that we've had for a little while. However, we have added a new flower to the mix. We got a couple joints. We got the bubbler loaded up, and we have some tangerine train wreck haze this week, Paul. It's kind of fruity, it's kind of spicy, and I'm going to break it down for everybody while you're puffing that tangerine or Tropicana cookies wax. It's tangerine haze crossed with Neville's wreck. Now, tangerine haze itself is a three-way cross of G13, regular haze, and New York City diesel, one of my favorites. Neville's wreck, I've never smoked or heard of. Have you?
No.
Well, Neville's Wreck is a cross of Arcata Train Wreck and Neville's Haze. Two more strains I've never heard of. You?
Nope.
So, a little bit interesting. I was excited that we could get this. And hopefully somewhere down the line, we can explore some of these Neville's strains here and whatever Arcata Train Wreck is. So, when I first heard the name, it's not what I thought the genetics would be. Paul, what did you think it was?
I thought it was like Super Silver Haze and like Train Wreck or something.
Like Pineapple Train Wreck or something? Mixed, maybe yeah. Some tangerine thrown in the mix?
A little tangy maybe.
So, interesting. I'm down or looking forward to smoking it when we fire these joints up. However, I'm going to take my turn on this Puffco here in a second and hit this bubbler while you're loading that up. Whatever you're smoking out there, folks, please let us know in the comments wherever you happen to be watching if comments are available. So, tell me, Paul, you've had the Puffco for... what, 2-3 weeks now?
Yeah.
How are you liking
my life?
Yeah. Are you hitting dabs off the, you know, dab rigs at all? Or are you just using this full time now? Tell us why. How has it changed?
It's just so convenient.
I'm going to hit it here.
It's so convenient, you know, kind of like similar to the e-nail. You know, it's just like, why would I go through all the issue of lighting up a fucking nail and all that shit when I can just double click the button, drop my shit, fucking hit it. And it's like, it's got the little case, so it's portable, take it wherever. It's, you know, I fuck with it.
They're not cheap.
I mean, yeah, but you can go on the website. They have like payment plan options. So
they have what?
They have like payment plan options, so like you can put money down and like pay a certain price per month for, you know.
How long do you gotta wait before you get your piece or whatever?
My friend got it like right when he paid the first payment. So
get out of here.
Yeah, so
that's crazy.
Obviously, don't be a shady motherfucker, but that's pretty dope, too.
My goodness. Hold on while I cough up a lung, everybody.
But, yeah, no, I fuck with a heavy, you know. I feel like there's really no reason to hit another rig right now. Been hitting this and bongs pretty much for flower.
How's the charging on that? Like, how long does the charge hold?
For a minute. And to recharge, it's only 2.5 hours.
See, both of us have now pretty much abandoned using a torch and a fucking rig. Because if you're watching on the screen, we got a PAX 3 up here as well, which is very similar to that. Only it's a little bit smaller and it does cannabis as well. It's more of a, and it doesn't have water, obviously, that's a bubbler. But both of these are kind of expensive. Like, this one was about $250 plus tax. And those are what, two, three?
It used to be fucking 400, but they moved down to 250, which is pretty bad.
Right. So that sounds expensive, but like when I bought this, I was like, dude, I'm overpaying, but I've been super happy with it ever since. And this the same way. Like if I bought that at the price point,
I don't feel like
point.
I'm overpaying at all. I feel like I'm underpaying.
Well, see, there you go. That's what I felt with the packs after I got it, you know. Yeah. And by the way, this is not an endorsement. These are not sponsors of the show.
Yeah, no.
That's just
dope
fucking
shit.
Real people who spent real money on products that are dope. I mean, yeah. And you're dropping $250 for a smoking utensil. That's pretty. That's for most people. That's a significant investment, you know.
Yeah.
Especially for some electronic shit. It's like,
yeah.
It's not like you can return it in most cases.
Yeah.
So does that have a warranty on it? Like this has a 10-year warranty if it fucks
up.
But like I registered it on the website and shit. Did you remember to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, dude. You don't want to. That was the first thing I did. Was like, how do I register this motherfucker?
Yeah.
But you know, if you don't, it'll break.
If you don't, it'll break.
That's how shit works.
What's cool about these two is like a lot of the local smoke shops I go to, like Dabbs Glasshouse and Gorilla Radio, they have like different like glass pieces. So like now artists are making like fucking actual like pieces for.
So you can change out, what you're saying is you can change out this glass piece. If you're watching on YouTube video, this topper comes off here.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're making unique ones to go on top. Oh, okay. Word.
Really super.
I see.
So like you can buy a whole other one. I mean, not saying they're cheap either, but they're, if you're into like glass, like myself, you know, I like different, a lot of different like glass artists' work. So
right.
There's another like one that Puffco makes too that has like, it's pretty nuts. It has like two like drop downs. There's a whole bunch. It's like five or six perks on it. Like that shit is fucking crazy, dude. I saw the guy making it on this YouTube video I watched, and it was fucking mind blowing.
You know how it is, man. With me, I cough with that shit. Even if it's on a nail, the packs even makes me cough at the end too. Mm-hmm. All of them do.
Well, let's dive into it. Let's get to our.
We've got our news outside the cage to start the episode this week, right?
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right, a couple things here, Paul. And the first one to start the show with, which I alluded to in the intro, is a heavyweight title mess.
Yeah.
And
so inside and the outside of the cage.
Right.
Kind of story.
Well, why don't you refresh everybody on what sparked, in case they don't know, what sparked this situation? Or like, what happened here? What did Dana White go do?
So, after numerous times to numerous, like, situations with, you know, negotiating the heavyweight title fight for whether it be Ngannou Jones, freaking Ngannou Lewis. Now, we end up with an interim title fight with Ciryl Gane and Derek Lewis.
An interim title fight, and Ngannou was requested to fight, and he could not make the date, correct?
Yeah.
And so he had 5 weeks later he could make it. We're talking about August and September here.
Yeah,
they offered
much.
It to him in early August, and he could go in mid-September. Yeah,
exactly.
And this is after he won the championship about 90 days ago.
Yeah. And he wants to go home, dude.
He returned
family.
To Africa, which has still protocols for the pandemic in place, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, no, he's going to go back is the thing. Like, he already had a planned trip. Like, that kind of thing, you can't uproot a fucking planned trip to Africa, bro. Like, there's all kinds of different, you know.
But, right.
Just like you were talking about, like, with the COVID policy, not alone. Also, just going to Africa in a normal year without COVID being involved.
And now he's like, the heavyweight champion of the world. Yeah. He's got other obligations going on. There's press preparing
for him. And
it's
only been 3 months. I'd understand if it had been, like, a year. But we're talking to 3 months.
Yeah, this is 90 days ago and a 5-week difference that the UFC decides to go ahead and give last week's winner, Ciryl Gane, this bullshit interim title, which is just this is a slap in the face to Francis Ngannou, is what it is.
Yeah.
And there's speculation in media right now that a lot of this has to do with the fact that he went out on Twitter and criticized the UFC's pay scale publicly.
As he should.
Yes, as he should. and that he's getting bitch slapped now by Dana.
Because is he though?
Yeah.
I don't think he is.
Dude, it's insulting as fuck to put this interim title in place. Like, it's a huge insult to him.
No, I agree with that. It's very insulting.
That's what I mean by bitch slapped. I mean, he's being insulted. Like he's like nothing. Like, fuck you then. We don't even need you.
That's the thing.
We've got Cyril gone. I think it's going to
backfire. That's my point of view is more that, like, obviously, who we're talking about later is the biggest name in combat sports is Conor McGregor. But, like, Francis Ngannou is probably the second best as far as, like, people, everyone is clamoring to watch. Like, especially after the Stipe win, like, I think so many people were talking about that on the internet, and so many people were watching that fight that I feel like aren't normally watching those fights, you know what I mean? I think he's built this name, and, like, that whole... This whole ESPN merger too. Also, I helped build up that last fight with Francis too. So, I just feel like he's a bigger name than he's ever been right now.
Of course,
and
he
to
is.
Just
he's...
like think that you can move on and kind of give it to the next star, and this is the UFC. We got guys who are the best all the way through, and if you aren't ready to fight, we'll just move on to the next guy. I just don't think that's something that they could do with Francis right now.
Well, like, I hate to break it to you, but too late because they just did it.
Yeah, but that's why I think it's going to backfire.
I hope it backfires because it's never been done in the history of the UFC. Just to clarify, for some people, like Paul and I have a list here of every UFC champion ever because this would be impossible to memorize. UFC heavyweight champion, and in this list it breaks down exactly how long they held the title. And how many defenses that they had.
Yeah.
And so you could make a loose average at it's been defended one to maybe two times a year max through the history of this weight class. In fact, Fabricio Werdum, as an example, when he was champion, he held the belt for like 330-something days.
Yeah.
And he lost in his first title defense.
Yeah.
Just think about that. He won it. And then
36 days.
Almost a year later, yeah, he has his first defense, which he promptly loses. But
yeah.
You get the point. It was 300-plus days later, not 90 days. Mm-hmm. Stipe, 700-plus days, three defenses.
Yeah.
You've got Kane. Look at Brock Lesnar. 707 days, two defenses.
Yeah.
That's about one a year. Like, this just is not... What happens
it's just
in,
bullshit.
In the title
it's,
picture?
Yeah, no,
here.
It's definitely a slap in the face to Francis. Like,
why would they do that? Yeah. Like you said, not only is he big, I mean, let's be honest, he's built like an action hero. Mm-hmm. He's appears to be the most ferocious puncher since
best
Mike.
Story ever.
He appears to be the most ferocious puncher since Mike Tyson. He's got, like you just said, a hell of a backstory.
Yeah.
He's from a country that there's been a shortage of UFC champions, Africa, and a huge market there that they're clearly wanting to get to, as we've discussed prior. Mm-hmm. Oh, but there was a week or 5 week difference between when they wanted him to fight. So fuck all that shit. Derek Lewis, Cyril gone. Cyril Gane. How do I say it? Am I saying it wrong?
I think it's gone.
Cyril gone. So I can't say I'm not on the Gane train.
I mean, Gane works too if you say Gane.
I've been wanting to drop that. Because I'm not on the fucking Gane train.
I mean, I think he's talented.
Of course he's talented. He's just boring, and he doesn't deserve to be heavyweight champion.
I don't necessarily know if he doesn't
right
deserve
now, yeah, as an interim title.
I don't necessarily know if he doesn't fuck deserve that. It, but he definitely, I don't know if an interim title fight is what needs to be done in the division right now.
Just
both guys, both him and Derek Lewis are both very talented guys, and both have some sort of, you know, say as to where they should be, like maybe in the division, you know, like that's that Volkov win for Gane, that's big, you know. Derek Lewis's last knockout of Curtis Blades, those are big wins.
I guess, like, it was big, but it was also boring.
I just,
well,
mean
I started reading articles on,
like,
my
I just mean
phone.
Rankings.
Like, yeah. Damn, that was boring.
Yeah, but I just mean like rankings wise. Like, I'm just saying, like, as far as where you're at in the division, both guys kind of have like a win streak. Wins against notable opponents, and the champion doesn't have a fight yet. So, like, maybe you make this fight, but why does it have to be for an interim title? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, the problem isn't that the fight was made. The problem is that the title is being made here, and it totally diminishes the title that Francis holds.
Yeah.
He's not injured, and he's perfectly capable of defending, and he's not within the... This like, kind of... There's been, like, this mythical, you must defend within a year thing that's been instituted since... Over the last 3-4 years, I don't know if it's written down, but it's kind of what Dana has come out publicly and said. So he's not fallen within that,
which is fair.
He's not going to be out for a long period of time, and now it just to me it makes the UFC look terrible. It makes people who don't know the situation think that the title Francis holds is diminished. I guarantee you.
Yeah,
it hurts him in the long run, his marketability. And it fucks up the pecking order that was already in place, which we discussed at length in our last episode. There's a pecking order that's not maybe not established as to who the exact order, but it's John Jones, Stipe Miocic, and Derek Lewis. And now suddenly it's Derek Lewis and Ciryl Gane. And so they get the next shot guaranteed.
Exactly, because then they get the next shot guaranteed. But what are you going to do, UFC, if John Jones comes to the table talking about, you know, solid numbers that you could work with, and you got Derek Lewis or Ciryl Gane running around as the interim champion, and Francis hasn't fought them yet, and is more willing to fight John, and then we see Francis defend the title again before the interim champion gets a title shot. Because I could see the UFC doing that. Let's just be honest. Like, there's a situation in which I could see if John Jones were to come to the table and, you know, maybe this is a month from now, and Francis is still technically the unified champion, and that interim title fight is in a week and a half or 2 weeks and a half. What happens?
Right, it's just going to be a mess all the way around.
A mess they brought upon themselves, though.
Right, so let's discuss the why, because it's not because Dana suddenly doesn't like Francis Ngannou.
That's a big part of it.
That's part of it, but the other part of it is the UFC needed a bigger name for the show that they're putting this in Texas than Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena, who would have that is the currently slated headliner, and they're trying to boost it with this title fight. And you know why?
Yeah.
It's because when you look at her numbers, despite her incredibly talented and amazing skill set that she has, she averages 100,000 and less on her pay-per-view sales, which is worse than Demetrius Johnson, who it's famously Dana went out and shit all over all the time and then traded away.
She has three of the five worst-selling pay-per-views in UFC history.
Right, and that is by no means, to be clear, any shade from us to her. Facts are facts.
No, it's just the facts.
And it's why the UFC is doing this.
Well, and there's a different way you can look at that without being disrespectful. It's not that necessarily people don't like her, I don't think. I just think that she's an extremely dominant champion in which people are like, you know, I know she's going to win. I don't necessarily. And she's not a huge star. You know what I mean? Like, she's a star, but she's not a huge star. Like, pay-per-view wise. She's a huge star, don't get me wrong. I'm just trying not to sound disrespectful, but, like, just realizing where you're at is kind of what happens with these, you know, negotiations when they break down.
Look, bottom line is she doesn't sell pay-per-views. Yeah. Make of that what you will. And the UFC has this weird, weird mentality where they have to have a pay-per-view headlined by a championship fight in 99.999% of the cases. And so they can't take the same fight of Derek Lewis versus Ciryl Gane and just make it the fucking headliner because, well, then it doesn't have a title fight. So, oh, I know what we can do. Francis suddenly doesn't want to fight. Well, fuck him anyways. He's been mouthing off on Twitter about the pay scale. Hey, Francis, interim time solves the problem. Yay, everybody at fucking WME and Dana shakes fucking hands and high-fives each other at the boardroom, and fucking the wheel turns forward in the UFC and the fighter gets fucked. Story of the goddamn UFC.
I've heard that a lot of this is Hunter Campbell pushing these like... What I read was that Hunter Campbell has said that in these situations in the past, he's felt like the UFC has always catered to the fighter, but sometimes it's the fighter that's doing the wrong thing, so they have to pay also. So that's why he feels like if the champion isn't ready to fight, then he'll just make interim title fights. Because if you look at since Hunter Campbell has joined, you know, the deciding part of the UFC, there's been 9 interim title fights. 9.
So I'm just caught a little off guard. It's just because you know what that is? That's a person who's been given power that clearly doesn't have respect for the sport at the proper levels. Somebody with respect for the sport knows that you don't throw around interim titles like that for the reasons that we've talked about at length. But the number one being that they devalue your actual titles. You cannot argue at that point. No. Interim titles devalue your regular titles.
Well, who wants 2 champions?
And so when you keep doing it over and over and over again, the message that it sends is your titles really don't mean shit.
Yeah.
Francis's champ doesn't mean shit. We need a fucking title fight. So now this guy's going to be a champ too.
So you just slap a belt on whoever.
Yeah. So no, he's a champ. And then the whole time, he's going to be the winner of that fight will forever be introduced as interim heavyweight champion, former. And, you know, it's not their fault. But what are they going to say? No.
It's not all the fighters. Definitely.
So don't misunderstand, listeners. We're not. It's not.
I'm not mad at Cyril Gane or fucking Derek Lewis for taking the opportunity to become a champion in the UFC.
Well, it really doesn't have anything to do with them.
Yeah, it has everything to do with the UFC making the choice to put an interim title fight on when there was no need to.
It's terrible. It does the exact thing that Dana said that the UFC would never do, which is. Turned into boxing with all these bullshit titles. Like, they can't do it the exact same way that boxing has, but they can do it by adding all these interim titles and devaluing their main ones. So,
exactly.
And again, looking at the history of the sport, I mean, even in the early days.
Well, I think that the main event this weekend should be for the interim lightweight title because Charles hasn't defended it in the last, at least 30 days.
Right. Absolutely.
Like what kind of logic are we like at the end of the, so what? It's August 7th or something like that. That's going to be a month from now. So it'll be like 140-ish days he'll be champion until between his title defense. When the fuck did 4 months become like the ledger of when you have to defend your belt?
It never has. It's bullshit. And why does the UFC, they have 2 choices here. I mean, they could do what they just did, or they could take their problem, quote unquote, with Amanda Nunes' pay-per-view sales and focus on marketing educating the public and marketing their most amazing, one of their most amazing champs in their stables, which you can do pretty easily through 30 on, you know, ESPN specials, fucking all social media.
That's one thing is like, I do think the UFC has benefited from being on ESPN, but I don't think they've really looked into all the extra shit that could cash them in on ESPN and kind of did more of the same shit they did at Fox, but just on a bigger platform.
Dude, and they've utterly failed. When WME took over, I was like, well, one of the benefits here is that this is a talent agency taking over that MMA promotion. They're going to turn these fighters into fucking superstars because they're a talent agency. That's what they do. And no, not at all, ever. Yeah. And we've talked about it before. Like fucking Modelo Beer does a better job marketing UFC fighters than the UFC does. Am I wrong? No. I mean, you've seen those commercials for Modelo Beer for several fighters. I think Amanda even has one.
That's where those 100,000 people came from.
I mean, they completely dropped the ball when Stipe was champion. But, you know, reminding the public who had no idea during all of 2020 and the pandemic that their heavyweight champion was actually out as a fucking paramedic fireman.
Yeah, saving people's lives.
Saving people, going out on calls all through the pandemic.
Like, yeah.
Your heavyweight champ was actually a fucking one of those first responders. Everybody was like, yay.
Yeah.
Not a peep.
Yeah.
Why? Because, well, he garbles this talk, so fuck him.
Yeah, it's rough. You know, it's really... makes no sense, really. Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
I want to bash my head in the shit. You have a talent agency. You've got stars in the waiting, and beer companies fucking go out and put commercials about how Stipe's a fucking fireman.
Yeah.
Make it look all cool. To slang the fucking beer. You can't even use it to sell your product.
Yeah. Well, this all ties into the same thing. So let's talk a little bit about something that also happened recently. And that's Jake Paul and Thriller. You know?
Jake Paul and Thriller and Sarah Alpar. Triller.
Yeah. They donated $30,000
between the
two of them. Alpar's GoFundMe. Well,
let's tell everybody, Sarah Alpar is a UFC flyweight.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what did they give her all this money for? Is something going on?
What do you mean?
Like, what did she need $30,000
for? Oh, well, she put a GoFundMe up because she has a fight, finally, coming up in the UFC, and she can't afford a fight camp.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Surprise, so she just puts a GoFundMe up to just help with her fucking fight camp, right? Because she's a former LFA women's bantamweight champion, right? Yeah. She got a UFC contract after being successful on the Contender Series, right? And she's come out on interviews and said she was embarrassed to have to do an online fundraiser, but she wants to achieve her dreams. Yeah. But she couldn't get any sponsors in the UFC's limited, you know, yeah, what I mean, limited way that you fucking can. I don't blame anybody for not being able to get sponsors. You can't fucking do shit. Like, you can't do nothing. So she turned 30, and, like, she signed the contract after the Contender Series, and then she had fights fall out because of COVID, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with the fights falling out, she actually had to go back to work at Starbucks as a barista.
Damn.
Okay, and she's a mom as well. And then she gives some part-time jiu-jitsu lessons. Finally, a fight comes through. COVID comes out. She couldn't fight. Goes through the whole thing with no fights. Finally gets assigned here. And by the time that is, she has no money for a fight camp. So what is she supposed to do? Give up? Or just suck it up, be embarrassed, and I guess do a GoFundMe? Because the UFC ain't going to help her.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Why? Like, you're kidding me, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, this is a professional fighter in the largest organization in the world who got a contract on their TV show to find contenders doing GoFundMe. I mean, what if, you know, we can discuss the intentions of Jake Paul and Triller, but ultimately it doesn't matter because they gave her her goal. If 30,000 was her goal, Jake came in with 5. A few days later, Triller comes in with 25.
Yeah.
And they use it as opportunities to shit on the UFC. Triller and I don't like either of these. I don't like that company and I don't like Jake Paul, but I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. What are we supposed to say here? They're right.
They are right, yeah.
And it was really cool of them, for whatever reason, that they gave this money to Sarah Alpar. I mean, she can have her fight camp now.
Hopefully she wins.
Hopefully. I mean, can you imagine this scenario in any other sport taking place? Like, I don't know, Paul.
Just
like,
a train. Like, we're not talking about anything else. We're just talking a train. Imagine if, well, I don't know, even guys on the practice squad in the NFL are getting paid more than a lot of these people. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy to me. It's crazy to me.
It's absurd. I mean, I'm trying to imagine, like, an NBA rookie, you know, earning a contract, right? And then it's, like, the off season, and he wants to, like, go to the off season, or, like, or whatever. He wants to go to the pre-camp warm-up, whatever they fucking do, I forget. And he doesn't, like, no money, even though he's signed to a contract, and he has to, like, go, help me make it to training camp.
Yeah.
He has to do GoFundMe to go to training camp for the first NBA season.
It doesn't happen. That's the thing, though. Those kind of situations
of course not.
Don't
They'd
happen.
Be so embarrassed.
If you were under contract with the biggest fucking, you know, the biggest league in the world in your sport, there should be some kind of situation where training is built into what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, the UFC should be embarrassed. Dana White should be out there talking about, I'm embarrassed about the situation. We're going to put her up in Vegas, and she can go train at the Performance Center. It's not like the UFC couldn't help her out here.
Yeah.
They didn't have to give her money. They could just put her, I mean, gee, the former owners of the UFC own like 18 casino hotels here.
Yeah.
I wonder if Dana could get her a place to stay.
Yeah.
They have the Performance Center filled with coaches and the best equipment around. I wonder where she could go train. Like, it's not like the UFC had to give her $30,000.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, for fuck's sake, dude.
He's not asking. They're not asking for that. Like, yeah.
It's embarrassing.
She's asking for somewhere to train and somewhere to get ready to fucking get going. And for her to have to put up a GoFundMe is, it's just sad. Is really what it comes down to. It's just sad.
UFC should be ashamed of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the exact same thing that plagues our first conversation in the segment, the Francis Ngannou fight. I mean, this whole situation is happening because they don't want to pay John Jones or Francis what they want for the super fight.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Derek Lewis almost priced himself out. But obviously they couldn't make that fight. Otherwise, they would have made that fight.
Yeah.
Before, you know what I mean? Like, there are ongoing negotiations. And it's never going to change because the only solution to this is if these fighters band together and do some form of a union.
Yeah.
So they can get some form of collective bargaining. Mm. It's not like there hasn't been plenty of opportunity. It's
and that's why all those people we were just talking about, as far as like in all the other bigger leagues, have... You know, they have somewhere to train. They have somewhere. They have flights that are built in. All the different things that get bought by the organization that are facilities that they could use. You know what I mean?
And the shittiest base level contract that they could possibly sign is certainly enough to keep the lights on and keep the bills paid and, you know, make sure they can get back and forth to training camp.
Yeah.
I mean,
that kind of shit. Like, come on.
And then some. I mean, let's be honest. The last I heard. And this is a long time ago. Base salary in the fucking NBA was like 160K.
Yeah,
that was like
more than
10
that.
Years ago, I think.
Yeah,
man.
This shit is, it's like 890 now, I think.
And yeah, UFC don't have that kind of cash. But
that's a year, too. That's not like...
Here's the other thing I don't understand, and we'll maybe wrap the segment of
like
this conversation. They say this argument about the UFC and the pay-per-view sales of Amanda Nunes, but I thought that the UFC got a guaranteed 500,000 pay-per-view buys per event in this ESPN deal.
Yeah, but you got to remember,
I mean, they're not technically pay-per-view buys. I mean, they get paid like there was a half a million pay-per-view buys.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is once they're out of their debt, now they're trying to make the money.
And well, ESPN doesn't make any money. If they pay the UFC for a half a million pay-per-view buys and Amanda Nunes does 80K, ESPN's shit in the fucking bed with that as well.
Yeah.
And that's got to be tied into the UFC's financials. Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden you see more and more UFC ads and shit like that. And all the SportsCenter and stuff like that. So you got to think, I don't know. ESPN, like we talked about before too, ESPN's going through some shady shit with money too. So it's like maybe there's some pressure on their end too. Like, hey guys, I know Amanda's great. And I know she's, you know, she is who she is, but... We need some serious like numbers to start coming in because you guys might be making your nut, but you guys aren't giving us what you promised sometimes.
Right.
You know?
So,
like this weekend, obviously, we'll do fucking nuts. This weekend,
Connor
we'll do crazy numbers, stuff like that. But when it comes to these other fights, I would not be surprised if ESPN was kind of, you know, pressuring people like Dana and Hunter Campbell and, you know, a lot of these guys that were at the negotiating table with them to get their views into that 500,000 to 700,000 range and never below that 400, you know?
There's a big difference between even like 100K and 300K in sales like that. I
mean, well, yeah, I know, shit. Even
so.
Yeah.
I mean, a 300,000 selling pay per view is really not that great.
But it's not the worst,
But, I mean, 80 to 100 is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, you're fucking losing. They're losing their ass on that. So
It's
a shame.
And if they're still paying the UFC, like, they're getting 500, like, you know that they're... Just because the UFC's getting their net doesn't mean that freaking ESPN's happy about it. You know what I mean? Because this is just like any other network, whether it be Spike TV, Fox, or anything else like that. This is a contract-to-contract TV deal, you know? Like, if the UFC continues to drop the ball with these big level fights and they get paid but ESPN isn't making that money, they won't be on ESPN anymore in fucking whenever the contract ends, you know? Like, that's just – that's the nature of, you know, sports media. You know?
Absolutely. Too bad the UFC doesn't look to solve the problem by creating stars with their talent agency and their marketing budget.
Makes no sense.
It's never going to change either. I don't think they're ever going to unionize. The UFC is going to keep making interim titles like this at will in order to solve the problem.
Yep.
WME as a company doesn't give two shits about the sport aspect.
I can see them selling it again.
They might. I mean, they're making money, but they don't. I mean, they care about the UFC as it makes money, but they don't care about it, the sporting aspect of it. And you could say what you wanted to about the Fertittas, but I don't think it was bullshit when they said they cared about the sport. I think that's pretty clear.
Well, I mean, they had a much deeper relationship with a lot of the bigger stars in the promotion to begin with.
Absolutely. You know, some of them would bypass Dana and go to Lorenzo, and then Lorenzo would step in and mediate on things. And that dynamic is gone.
Yeah.
They're not going to that Ari motherfucker about anything. You don't even know who they are. So, fuck it. I think it sucks. What did you think of that joint we just smoked?
It was nice.
It was pretty fruity, this tangerine train wreck haze. Little spicy on the flavor, little orangey.
Yeah.
I got it in this bowl.
Definitely tastes that like.
Yeah. I like it. But I think that wraps up our news outside of the cage, and that brings us into our boxing breakdown. All right, this week on the Boxing Breakdown, let's get started with a recap of the big bare-knuckle boxing event, which was BKFC 18, which was capped off at the top with four title fights, two of them inaugural titles for the promotion.
Yep.
Which, and I'll start with this, Paul, as a big fan of the BKFC, I was stoked to be able to see this event for the $3.99 monthly fee that BKFC is.
Yeah.
And I was really excited to see inaugural titles because that means the promotion is growing.
Yeah.
It means, you know what I mean? They can support these divisions to the point where they can go ahead and crown champions now. And then we also saw a couple established weight classes with title defenses too.
Yep.
Overall, I thought it was a really exciting card. The preliminaries saw a lot of like lower skilled fighters. Now, here's an interesting thing that BKFC might run into this problem a little bit more, and we might not be aware of it. Is like I had a friend watch the prelims, but not the pay per view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he was like, "Yeah, it was cool, but these guys are really not very skilled fighters, clearly."
Yeah, the prelims.
Yeah, and these early prelims that are on YouTube for free, and that's very true. Like, it seems to me what they're doing is they have a little series called Toe the Line, which people go and they, like, get tryouts. It's kind of like the Contender Series in a way.
Yeah.
And if they win there, then they can get on to a BKFC event. And they seem to pair those guys up with, like, some straight newbies as well. So, yeah, it kind of bears a little more resemblance to a Tough Man contest on some of them. Like, the prelims here, we had three knockouts and one split decision. But the knockouts happened pretty fast. We had a five-second knockout. I mean, skilled fighters or not, five-second knockouts are pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had a 17-second knockout, which this guy might be a star. His name is Fames. I guess he's some kind of singer, okay? But apparently he's a legitimate fighter as well and some sort of legit fucking pop star of some sorts. But he seems to have some skill. He's got a little flair. He came out, he laid waste to this dude in 17 seconds. There's another 34-second knockout, so the prelims went kind of bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, they were just going.
Skilled or not, but the main card was pretty exciting. The one fight that I want to talk about was Julian Lane versus Jake Bostwick. This was a decision fight. It went all five rounds, but there was a lot of heat before.
Yeah,
Julian Lane, for those of you that somehow may not know who he is, he's the...
Likes to bang, bro.
Let me bang, bro!
Let me bang, bro! Let me bang.
From the Ultimate Fighter fame.
He's crying and shit.
His mohawk and his let me bang bro phrase, which I'm going to say one thing. He seems to have embraced time. He's got merch.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
you got it. You can't be mad about that shit, bro. That's fucking part of his thing. It's got to be, you know.
Dude, kind of like Artem Lobov embraced that whole goat thing that people say about him. Because people say it and they're not really talking shit.
Yeah.
But it's funny.
Yeah.
But they are kind of talking shit.
Yeah.
But it's always his fans.
Mm-hmm.
Art of the Goat.
Art of the Goat, yes.
let me bang, bro. Yeah. So anyway, his fight, there was a lot of heat beforehand, shoving at the weigh-ins, yeah, a lot of shit talking.
Dude, like, smacked him at the weigh-ins. I was like, whoa. Can't be smacking motherfuckers.
Julian Lane has a lot of experience now. This was his sixth fight in BKFC. And let me tell you, it showed. Mm-hmm. Like, he shined, bro. Like, I thought he looked marvelous. Like, not just going out there and winging punches like a lot of these guys do. He was gliding in and out.
Yeah.
He was looking really sharp. You know, next week I'm going to do a BKFC breakdown on my keys to success right now in BKFC, because I've been watching and studying it for a long time, and coming from my boxing breakdown, I think I've really identified some key points, which we'll go over next week. But he utilized these in this fight, and he whooped this motherfucker's ass. I mean, the final scores on the fight were 50-44, 50-43, and some crazy man scored it, 48-45.
Yeah, that's a beatdown.
And he looked incredibly talented while doing it. This kid's got a future in BKFC. He's clearly been putting in the work. And this is a sport where you just need a little bit more time. Like, comparing his fight to the aforementioned prelims, where you got a lot of these guys that didn't have a whole lot of skill levels, you can just see you can't really emulate that in training camp, right? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
Well, that's the thing, is there's a certain, like, grit to this, like, this league also. Like, you could really tell the difference between, you know, someone who's more crisp and sharp and technical versus someone. Sometimes the people who are just a little bit more wild can sometimes get the best of people in bare knuckle, because I feel like it's hard to keep yourself composed when it's hard to block and it's hard to maneuver and,
right,
you know, there's a lot of shit that could go wrong. You know what I mean? If you're trying to box or sometimes, like, fight at, like, a super traditional technical, like, place. You know what
Absolutely,
I mean?
Paul. We saw that a little bit on the card with some people rushing in real quick and just getting KO'd because they decided to rush in. People winging punches with their chin not tucked got KO'd real quick. So
but then
absolutely.
At the same time, too, like, I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit more in depth, but I feel like a little bit more, like, in the Beltran fight, there was a little bit more gamesmanship there, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, those guys, you could tell those guys had been in bare knuckle for a while and had, like you, I feel like what you were alluding to before, like, in the undercard, it was a lot of guys feeling out the sport, like, mm-hmm. like those quick knockouts happen when you got the jitters and you're like, I'm just gonna, you know, fly off the handle, you know.
Right.
But if you're a guy like, you know, although he has some wildness in him, like Thiago Alves, he's had a couple kind of boring fights in BKFC because you've seen him try to feel out the sport, you know, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. see where his openings are. He's not one of those guys who's just going to chase you down.
Yeah,
you
the
know?
Juxtaposition between the preliminary, early prelims, and the top four fights on the card was glaringly, it was like two different sports almost, like a tough man contest versus like a skilled sport. Yeah. No shade at the younger guys, because there's not, or the younger, I mean by younger in the sport,
because
there's nothing you can do if you don't have the experience. And circling back to Julian Lane, that's why he looks so damn good.
Yeah.
He's got decent striking, and now he's got six fights in there.
That's a
he
lot.
Looked great. I think he's going to be a problem in that division.
He's what, 5-1 now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 5-1 or 4-2. Either way,
he's in the plus.
Yeah, and it's clearly came together in this fight. Like, he whooped up on old boy, knocked him down several times, pieced him up, bloodied him up. He was bleeding so much, Julian was covered in his blood. I mean, it was a great fight.
I think there was a little bit of that, like, fuck you extra, like, added on to that, too.
Oh, yeah. He was talking a little bit of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. You know, who else really shined? And we talked about her last episode, making her debut, was coming out of the UFC, was Pearl Gonzalez.
Pearl Gonzalez. Is
she made her debut against, Carissa Segala. And dear God, that was probably the best debut of an MMA fighter I've seen in BKFC. Like, she looked spectacular. She whooped old girl's ass. She didn't look like she needed any feeling out. Like, Paige clearly needed time.
Yeah.
Like, Paige didn't get it together till round five. Mm-hmm. Pearl Gonzalez had it together the second she stepped in.
Yeah.
Like,
there was no transitional period.
And it wasn't because she was, like, wildly winging punches and got lucky. Like, no, she looked real
nice.
Technical. She trained with Amanda Serrano for this. Amanda was there in her corner. I mean, she came in with, as her intro, she had, like, you know, three dancers in skimpy clothes, come out looking all sexy, do a little dance routine, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the smoke billows out, and then she comes out, and she's wearing, you know, kind of a unique thing. Yeah, she's wearing a unique frilly fucking costume thing.
Yeah.
Little pink sequins on top, too. I mean, like, she's trying to stand out is what my
my
point is. She had a cool intro. Mm-hmm. She had a cool outfit. She came out and worked fucking opponent over. Well, there's
that showmanship that is part of, like, boxing more that you can use.
Yeah.
That, like... Can't, you know, you can't really do in the UFC. Like, they used to do it, like, back in the day in, like, Pride days and shit, but, and, like, in some other promotions, but a lot of times they won't let you do that on these, you know, higher-level things. So if you have the chance to do it, why not, you know? Stand out.
She looked exceptional. Absolutely. A unanimous decision, 50-45 across the board. Yeah. Spectacular.
Yep. Ball.
And that would bring us to the, am I spilling the bubbler?
Nah, you're good. It hit the other side.
Sweet. It'll bring us to the top of the card, which had four title fights on it. The first one was the lightweight title with Luis Palmino versus Tyler Goodjohn.
Yeah.
You know, Tyler coming out of British bare knuckle, where they do not have the clinch like they have in BKFC, where you can hold in the clinch and the Muay Thai clinch and punch. They don't have that there. He had his fight here against Charles Bennett, was his introduction to BKFC, but... And then he bumped right into a title shot because of his history in Great Britain, for those of people that are probably unaware of who he is.
Yeah.
Well, watching that fight, what did you think? I mean, it was a unanimous decision, once again, 50-45 across the board. Yeah. And for me, it was that Muay Thai clinch that really proved to be the difference.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I feel like that's another one of those guys who's like Luis Palomino has had a few fights in BKFC where, I mean, obviously, Tyler Goodjohn is... You know, from bare knuckle, but like you said, there's no.
He doesn't have that experience with the clinch and fighting and somebody using a Muay Thai plume on him.
Like. Yeah, even like I think, even in his MMA days, Louis would do a lot of that like Muay Thai clinch shit. So I feel like that's just second nature for him. You know,
right? So you had both of them clinching up, and Goodjohn's clinching up, but he's not throwing punches, and you've got Palmino just uppercutting the fucking hell out of him.
Yeah,
And then Goodjohn's landing good blows and the rest of it, and he's moving well, and he's tough as nails. I mean, it reminds me of, like, Nate Diaz almost in his toughness. Like, he'll eat a punch and wave more action on, please, and come forward. But he just didn't have an answer. Like, they clinched up a lot. Palmino was smart. And it was just so one-sided in the clinch that was, to me, the deciding factor. And then after a while, all those strikes started taking a toll, you know, by the later rounds. It's like, you know... Then his punches aren't landing so much to Palmino's, and that sealed it up. But that was really the key.
Mm-hmm.
So another successful title defense for Palmino, who's really making a name for himself, you know, leaving WSOF and now establishing himself as a dominant champion in the BKFC. What was the next fight on the card?
Then we had Thiago Alves defeated Yuli Diaz by TKO. It was like it stopped in between rounds, I believe.
And that was for their middleweight title. Now, Yuli Diaz has made a name for himself virally with...
Was a seven-second knockout or something like that?
Yeah, it was 4 or 3. Was it that small? I think it was under 5. And the only reason it's possible is because of the scratch line.
Yeah.
They start so close that a UFC fighter...
It was a one-punch knockout, in other words.
Yeah, right at the scratch line. Like, ding, ding, one punch, dude's down, fight's over.
Yeah.
Viral sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in against Thiago Alves, former UFC fighter.
Yeah.
170-pound division there, who is a beast in the UFC, right?
Yeah. And he was given, you know, he was giving Alves some work. It was not like a super one-sided fight by any means. I thought it was a war up to
then.
Yeah,
it was 2 rounds and then stopped before the third by the doctor, right?
Yeah. Like, it was a war. Like, Alves was bleeding pretty bad. And freaking, I think it was just a little bit more experience / like toughness from Alves that really like was the decider.
Yeah, he seemed to be able to handle getting punched early and then persevering to the later rounds, you know, 3, 4, and 5 where
I feel like Diaz threw everything he had.
Mm-hmm.
He just threw everything he had into it. And once he realized Alves wasn't going down from everything he had, he was like, fuck, I'm in trouble.
Right. I don't know why I was talking like it went to 5 rounds, but I mean, it didn't. It only went to 2 rounds. But early in the fight, it just seemed Diaz, he was right. He was he was going real heavy, and then come the end of round two, visibly he's already tired, and then the doctor came in after he was getting pieced up. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a good fight for Thiago Alves, who now becomes the BKFC, the inaugural BKFC middleweight champion.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him. I don't mind him at all. I didn't mind him in the UFC. I like watching him fight. Dude seems to be tough as shit, you know.
Yeah, good for him. Make some money.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, I mean, he's one of those guys who is kind of like who we'll talk about in a minute, kind of like Hector Lombard, who's, you know, had an extensive MMA career and now is kind of in the twilight and is, you know, I don't know his financials or anything like that, but, like, it's never bad to get a couple big paydays before you hang them up, you know.
Yeah, for sure. The next fight was the co-main event, which was the inaugural cruiserweight title fight, which in BKFC, by the way, is 205 pounds is their cruiserweight. And that saw Hector Lombard versus Joe Riggs, which Hector Lombard gets a doctor stoppage in round four.
Was it a doctor stoppage? No, because it's technically a... It was like a knockout.
It was a TKO. Yeah. It was bullshit is what it was. It's not... It's Hector Lombard's fault, but it's not his fault. The referee made a mistake in what he called it.
Yeah, it was a ref, honestly.
I
mean,
prior to that, I had Hector Lombard winning the first round. I had Joe Riggs winning the next two rounds.
Yeah, it was a competitive fight.
Yeah. I thought Riggs was coming back with the win. I really did. And then what happened was Lombard has Riggs up against the side of the cage, and the ref is behind him, and Lombard is openly, clearly holding on to the front of Riggs' shorts while pulling him off of, like, the... It's not the cage, and it's not the ropes, but it's
like
bars.
The steel bars.
Yeah, pulling him off the side of their squared circle at the same time while punching him. Mm-hmm. And the ref is behind Lombard waving it off, saying it's because he's cheating. And he's like, stop. You know, stop the fight. He's going to separate them and give fucking Lombard a warning. Yeah. So Riggs sees this in his, and he gets cleanly punched in the face, where it, like, it seems to go into his eye, like the knuckle goes in his eye, and he goes down.
A lot in BKFC.
Yeah. So the ref steps in and he calls it
a knockdown.
Yeah, he calls it at first a knockdown, and there winds up being controversy over he was stopping the fight due to a foul. What would have happened, or what should have happened, was the fight would have been a foul was committed.
Yeah.
Inadvertent, but it would have gone to scorecards because enough rounds had been completed where if it was early enough, like if that was round one, it'd be a no contest. What should have happened was it's deep enough in where it goes for the scorecards for a winner, which would have been Joe Riggs on the scorecards. Yeah. Instead, he rules it in a way that it became a TKO victory.
That's the thing, though.
For Hector Lombard.
Here's the thing. A big part of that also was depending on if the punch, because at first he called it an eye poke. It wasn't originally a punch. Like, everyone was saying that it was like an eye injury from a poke, and that if it was a clean punch, that it was a TKO. If it was an eye poke, it would have gone to the cards. So a big part of that also was it being, not saying it was a legal punch. Like, I agree with you. Like, that was kind of stupid.
That is,
the short pulling to the punch. It was a weird kind of like comparable to, like, if you go back to, I can't remember who it was when Floyd was fighting him, but he fucking headbutted Floyd, and then, like, the ref broke it up to headbutt, and Floyd caught him clean and knocked him out.
Was that Victor Ortiz?
I think it was Ortiz. But yeah, it was kind of a situation like that where, like, the ref was trying to step in, but because the action was kind of still going, like, both guys, like, yeah, I agree with you. Riggs kind of, like, relaxed, but,
like, if Riggs hadn't gone down,
watch that in slow motion, it looks bad. But if you watch that, like, as it's happening, it was kind of a bang, bang, bang thing. And it was like, whoa, he's down, but it was supposed to be getting broken up.
Yeah.
Like it was weird.
Like, if Riggs hadn't gone down and been hurt, like, if he had just stood there
like
and backed up,
there,
and let's say the eye thing didn't happen, then it would have been a foul or at least a warning to Hector Lombard for short scrapping, and then the fight, then it would separate them, and then it would have continued either at the scratch line or right there.
Yeah.
But instead of, because the eye gets fucked up with the punch, now it's a TKO victory ultimately for Hector Lombard, which is, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Then afterwards, Hector Lombard is, you know, celebrating, in there with his crew. You know, Riggs is a little upset, but not at Lombard.
Yeah,
he's upset
more
at the ref.
Yeah,
in the situation, like he was talking to Lombard, and then Lorenzo Hunt jumps into the cage or whatever you want to call it, and comes up behind Lombard talking shit. And Lombard turns around and is not having it, dude. Like, hits him with the two-piece 1-2 straight to the jaw.
And dude was like, he was not with the shit, though. He was like, not. Like, because, like, Joe Riggs breaks it up. And he's like, whoa, 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 Hector, chill, chill. Like, but, like, the other fool was more like, hey, man, why'd you hit me? Instead of, like, what the fuck? I'm going to hit you back. Like, you know what I mean? He was not fighting back. It was more like he got two-pieced and was like, whoa, what just happened?
Yeah, Lombard wasn't playing no games.
He's
like,
playing zero
games. You ain't taking my spotlight.
He ain't taking my shit at all.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Pieced him up. Which was something that was interesting that it was Riggs, like you said, that broke it up.
Yeah.
So, not without controversy, Hector Lombard is now the cruiserweight champion at the BKFC at 205 pounds.
Proud of him.
That's some shit, man. I felt bad for...
Proud, bro.
Dude, I'm a big Joe Riggs fan. I felt bad for Joe Riggs.
Yeah, no, it was a weird situation where it was like...
Like, if it hadn't caught his eyeball, the fight would have continued.
Or, like, yeah, for sure.
It was crazy.
Like, if he would have just ate the punch and was still standing there, it would have been like... Like hitting someone after the bell, kind of viewed, I feel like.
Right. At the very worst, what would have happened is maybe Lombard loses a point and the fight's restarted. Yeah. At the best, it was a warning to Lombard and a restart of the action.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it turns this weird
into chaos.
Yeah. Weird TKO victory with Joe Riggs, who don't.
Well, know. I mean, it's not like you can't run that back. It was a competitive fight to where I thought Riggs proved enough that he's not, like, out of the title picture by any means.
From what I've seen publicly of David Feldman, their promoter over there, he seems to be pretty cool. Like, he went directly up to Riggs and said a lot to him in his ear.
Yeah.
And then hugged him and then said a whole
lot
more.
Shit happens, bro.
Yeah. Like, I felt it seemed like he was telling him, we're going to do something for you.
Yeah.
What do I
do? Run it back.
Then that brings us to the top of the card, which was a heavyweight title match between Joey Beltran defending his title against former champ Sam Shoemaker. You know, I was wrong. Beltran weighs more than I thought, dude. He clocked in at 230 for this. I thought he was still in the, like, the 210
range. Yeah, he's still a little skinny, though.
Yeah, he's a little chubby.
Yeah.
So is Sam Shoemaker, for that matter.
Not I meant, like, skinny up for heavyweight, though. He's a smaller heavyweight, for sure. 230 small.
Well, Beltran wins the decision 49-46, 49-46, and 48-47.
Yeah.
For some reason, people threw shade, right?
Yeah.
Like, you thought there was some negative talk about this fight, right?
Yeah, a lot of people on MMA Fighting and a few other websites were saying that it was boring.
I didn't find it boring. I mean, I thought it was fine. It was a little more technical, but these are skilled. Like, Sam Shoemaker's got it.
Yeah,
they both went in 4-1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which. When you compare that to boxing or MMA records, it sounds like nothing. But for its current state in BKFC, that's almost the veteran status.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, Julian Lane, we're talking about how great he looks because he's got 6 fights.
Yeah.
You know, these guys have 5 coming into this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it was technical. It wasn't guys going into the middle of the, you know, the scratch lines and just winging wild punches with their chins up in the air. No, it was technical fighters throwing a lot of 1-2s, a lot of in and out movement, and a lot of guys that didn't want to get KO'd. Was it the most exciting fight of the night? No.
Even Beltran, after the fight, though, said it was boring.
Yeah. That's what I didn't find it boring, but clearly it wasn't the barn burner of the card.
Well, and I do think a little bit of that goes into how much chaos went down before that fight. Like, that was the most tame fight of the night, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're talking about the main card, like, each fight was like some crazy shit happened, whether it be the Lombard fight, the Alves fight, even the freaking Julian Lane fight. Like, all those fights were like bloodbaths when you really, like, look at it. But that main event was more, like you said, a little bit more technical, a little bit more picking your shots, and getting behind your punches instead of throwing like some, like, you know, big winging punches. It was more technical.
I think you can even see what we're talking about here illustrated in the results. If you pull back and look at them, you've got the early preliminaries where you've got a lot of people who aren't proficiently technical in BKFC yet. And what is it? It's
knockouts.
Knockout, 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 knockout.
Yeah.
And then as you get near the top of the card, it's decision, 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 decision.
Yeah.
Where all the technical guys who have experience are fighting. Mm. But to me, all of them overall were very exciting. I always find BKFC exciting. And I keep yapping about the price range, but I mean, when you're paying fucking like $4 a month.
Yeah, $4 is definitely worth it.
You get one event a month plus the fucking all the other shit on the website, which is dope. And I don't think it's going to be that way forever. It's not a sustainable business model, but clearly they're building a base here, getting interest, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think that wraps up the BKFC.
Yep.
And there's one other thing we wanted to talk about in the boxing breakdown.
So there's been a little bit of controversy surrounding that Manny Pacquiao Earl Spence fight. Paradigm Sports Management is now attempting to block Manny's ability to fight in that bout due to them having some kind of like deal in place to fight Mikey Garcia, and his other management group, I guess, went behind their back and had Manny sign the other, had him sign the fight with Spence. So I don't know. It's this is what I was saying a little bit before the show, but I just don't understand why Manny has two groups of managers.
That seems, well, why wouldn't he? I mean, every country has two presidents. Every football team has two coaches. I have 18 bosses. I mean, why wouldn't you have two men? I mean, I get what you're saying. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. It sounds like a recipe for conflict and somebody making bad choices.
Yeah. And, like, not to say that he should fight Mikey, but I do think it's a better fight for him than Earl Spence's. You know?
I agree.
How lucrative the deal was, I don't know. You know? But now you've got this weird situation where Paradigm is trying to stop Manny from having his opportunity to fight his next fight. But my real question here is, like, other than the pettiness of you didn't pick us and you picked them, what does Paradigm Sports really gain from Manny not fighting Earl Spence? Because from what it seems, they're obviously not working together anymore. And if you're Manny, you kind of got a career clock that's ticking away. Like, what really does it do for you to stop Manny from fighting?
I don't know. Do you think the only thing I could think of is they think he'll lose, and they want to cash in on the Garcia fight because they think he could win that one. Otherwise, I don't know.
But that's the thing. If working with them in general is off the table and they parted ways, what do they have to gain from Manny not fighting Earl Spence other than some kind of monetary gain in a courtroom, which is beside the fight, you know?
I don't understand it either. I hope this fight doesn't get derailed.
Yeah.
Because I am looking forward to it.
Well, because also they're talking about re-upping Manny to the official champion.
Yeah, reinstating him like, from champion in recess.
Yeah, he was like champion in recess. Whatever.
And then what? So the other guy is the...
No, he's not champion at all. He's stripped.
They just strip him?
Yeah.
All right.
It's fucked up, but yeah.
Boxing.
It's terrible. It's just terrible.
Well, let's hope they get that sorted out here pretty soon and we get some clarity as to what's coming next. I think that wraps up the boxing breakdown, though. And that brings us to what's in the cards for next week. Well, this is it, Paul. I think we need to fire up this joint here.
Yep.
And it brings us to the big dog.
The big dig dough.
UFC 264 here in Las Vegas at T-Mobile with a full crowd. Mm-hmm. Headlined by Conor McGregor's return against Dustin Poirier for the final in their trilogy.
Yep.
If you're somehow under a rock, it's 1-1 apiece. Good card overall.
Yeah.
Too many
firefights.
Too many on the undercard to really go into all of them. So why don't we pick one or two here that you want to talk about and I want to talk about, and then we'll go all the way up. Obviously, we're going to spend some time talking at the top of the card.
I mean, a pretty low-key, pretty good middleweight matchup. You got Mario Makhachev taking on Brad Tavares. That's pretty tough.
That's good. Brad Tavares hasn't been.
I mean, that's a cage that's a middle. What? Like, I think that's probably a number 14 versus 15 matchup, something like that.
That's a good way to get the prelims going. Yeah.
Akhmedov's coming off that loss to Chris Weidman, so he's probably going to be looking to get things back. And obviously, Tavares has had his ups and downs in the last few years.
I'd like to see Tavares get the win here, but I don't know that. He lost against Weidman, but it was a tough victory.
Yeah, he made Weidman work for that shit.
He worked for it, yeah. So it's hard to judge exactly where his skills at.
And he had Weidman rock low-key in that fight, too.
He did. That's what I was going to say. Is Weidman just falling off, or is this guy Akhmed really that good?
Yeah.
So if he goes in and handles Brad Tavares, maybe he really is that good. Yeah. Tavares is a good measuring stick here for where he's at, really.
Mm-hmm.
What about Nico Price? He's coming back on this card, isn't he?
Yeah, he's taking on Michel Paeta.
Oh, you gotta like that fight.
Yeah, it's gotta be. That's gonna be a banger for sure.
Is that your pick for fight of the night?
I would think. You know, there could be some serious fireworks.
Piero always does wild stuff.
Does wild shit, and so does Nico Price. Nico Price does the wildest shit sometimes.
I mean, these two could just
be crazy. Both dudes love to fight too. So fuck, I can't wait for this. Like, they're both, like, there's one, you know what I mean? Like, there's, obviously everyone loves to fight, but there's certain guys where you watch it and they just look like they're having the fucking best time of their life in there. That's
yeah,
Nico Price,
guys,
like,
yeah.
In a nutshell.
Do you have a pick for who's going to win and how? I mean,
one of them is going to win by a spectacular knockout.
It's going to be mostly a standing affair.
Oh, like, yeah.
Piera doesn't have a ground game that I'm aware of that he likes to implement, and Nico Price is definitely a banger.
I mean, Nico Price has a ground game, but he's always down to bang. You know?
Yeah, that could be a strong contender for fight of the night as well. You know, we got Carlos Condit. I always like watching him fight, but I'm a little leery about his matchup here. He's coming in against Max Griffith.
Yeah, Max looks tough in the last
fight. He's real tough, man. Carlos is on the way out career-wise. I mean, how many punches can you keep taking? So the fan in me would like to see Carlos Condit get the win, but I think we're going to actually see a Max Griffin KO is the most likely.
Dude, Max has had some sniper
most
KOs in his last two fights. Like, he's really come on strong.
Yeah, I could see a second round knockout here.
Yeah.
Technical, most likely, but, you know, stoppage. This fucking thing is running.
Well, talk a little bit about something that happened this week as well. So, Sean O'Malley was originally scheduled to fight, fuck's his name?
Louis Smolka.
Louis Smolka, yeah. Unfortunately, he got COVID, so he had to back out. And now he's taking on, what's this guy's name?
Chris, I mean, no disrespect to this guy. Chris Moutinho.
I believe he's like an LFA champ or something.
I tried to look up his stats. The UFC website had nothing.
UFC is bullshit. You don't go to that website.
I don't understand this matchup. And what we're about to say here is no respect to this kid.
No disrespect.
Maybe no disrespect. No respect to you. No disrespect, bro. But this is not a good matchup, man.
Well,
there was
a
lot of opportunities
him,
here.
Sorta. Yeah, there's a hell of opportunity for him to shock the world, without a doubt.
And there was opportunity for Sean O'Malley to get a better opponent.
Exactly. And there's also opportunities for him to get beat down, and like his one shot at the UFC gets kind of squandered because of, you know.
Yeah,
because
he comes in against Sean O'Malley.
Yeah.
I mean, what do we think here? Like, why didn't why didn't any of these other guys get the fight?
I don't know. That's what I'm wondering.
Plenty
too.
Of people stepped up on short notice for this fight. Does the UFC not want to risk a Sean O'Malley loss on short notice to a fighter he hasn't prepared for?
Maybe.
Do you think behind the scenes O'Malley and his management were like, we got some newbie that can come up, right? And sign some fucking contender series, dude. I'll fight him. I'm not saying you're pussing out. I'm just saying, could that have happened as a management decision because a loss
does so much damage.
Right. And, I mean, yeah, you know, the odds are slightly tilted when you've been preparing a fight camp for somebody and you do get swapped out and somebody else comes in. It can be dangerous.
Yeah.
And he's in a precarious place.
Yeah.
It's a possibility.
It's a possibility, but I just don't like that.
I don't like it, and I don't like this matchup, though.
But, yeah, I think Sean's going to win.
Why else would he be fighting? Why else would they pull up some dude from the minor leagues nobody's heard of?
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up.
Oh, my goodness.
You dying?
Yeah, I am. This joint. You're making me cough, sir. Well, let's get up to the main card we've got. A heavyweight matchup is pretty interesting. I mean, there's a guy we don't like talking about on here, which is Greg Hardy. He's coming back against Tia Tuivasa, though. And I find this to be an interesting heavyweight matchup, Paul.
I think Ty's going to knock him the fuck out.
I really hope so. I mean, at this moment, as much as I dislike Greg Hardy, I mean, he's 7-3. He's been in the UFC a minute. He is... He's had some losses. His last five fights, he's had two losses and a no contest. But he does have two wins in the UFC in his last five. Mm-hmm. We've got Tia Tuivasa coming off back-to-back wins after three losses in a row.
You know his name's Ty, right?
Ty. Am I saying it wrong? Tia? Ty? Oh,
it's just Ty.
I'm high. I'm high, and I'm glancing at his name on paper. Thanks for telling me after I said it like 10 times. Don't you love this guy? What can I say?
Yeah, no, for real, though. I think...
It's not as bad as Joey Diaz with Khalilia Mohamed. But, yeah.
Steopic.
Ty. Michi Steopic. Steopic. Well, Tuivasa.
Yeah.
I hope he whoops that ass, too. I mean...
Well, here's the thing. Is I think he's... Since he's changed camps, I do think his game has evolved. We saw in his last fight, he was willing to go to the ground. And, you know... I think that's going to be big, you know, because we did see also in Greg's last fight, he got took down by Tsarbora and just got dominated from the top.
He did get taken down really quick.
And just got dominated, ends up getting TKO'd, you know. So I could see if, you know, because Ty's been at AKA and been at a few different gyms, I could see him, you know, using that wrestling advantage and taking Greg down quick and putting him down.
I don't know if he could get that takedown, though. Greg's big, obviously. He's a monster in there. Tuivasa 6'2", Greg's 6'5". Tuivasa usually comes in about 250-ish and a little chunky.
Yeah.
All right. Greg comes in at 265 and looks like Greg Hercules on steroids. I mean.
Greg will miss weight on you, ass.
He'll miss weight at heavyweight. Like, that was a thing that could have happened. Was it his last fight?
Yeah.
Where he was over and had to go back and actually cut. I mean, that's just how big he is.
It's crazy.
So it is a problem. I don't know. I'm not that impressed with Tuivasa's ground game. He does have heavy hands, though. He has very heavy hands.
Yeah.
And he could lay him out, which would be the best thing that could happen. It's what he needs. It's the win that he needs to get him back into the spotlight is to knock out the villain.
And that would be three in a row for him.
Yeah, that's a statement of heavyweight. And hopefully, you know, there'll be an interim title fight for him in the
right
future.
Right around the corner.
Right? It's three in a row. I think that they'll probably just gift him the interim title.
The double interim title.
Jesus. So, yeah, normally three in a row in a typical heavyweight division in the UFC at a typical time, that could even get you a title shot, no joke.
Yeah.
But right now, no, not even close.
Yeah.
Might get you an interim. A shot at the interim, maybe.
An interim. The interim will defend his interim title against you.
Like, what if Francis is like, I'm fighting Jones. Do you think that they would strip him if he refused to fight the interim before either Stipe or Jones? And then just elevate him? Or do you think that they would just have him defend and continue contracting?
I think they would strip the interim and then just keep him as the champion. If he said he was just fighting Jones.
It'd be crazy.
It'd be nuts.
But, all right, the next fight up above that one is going to be a barn burner in the 170-pound division, which is Gilbert Burns versus Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Mm. Although, dude, before we dive into this, how long do we have to keep calling this guy Wonderboy?
Forever.
He's like 38.
He's a Wonderboy, so.
You're Wonder Man Boy. You're not Wonder Boy. You can't be 38 if people call you Wonder Boy.
That's who he is, and that's who we be.
I don't know. You do you, bro. Goody two shoes,
but
motherfucker.
This is a real crossroads fight for him, honestly.
For the Wonder Boy?
Yeah.
The Boy Wonder?
This could be, like, his last chance, if you really think about it. Like, Gilbert Burns, obviously coming off the knockout loss to Usman. It's tough, because if he wins this fight, I don't think he gets a title shot, but I do think if Wonderboy wins, he is next for Usman.
Well, Burns isn't going to get a title shot with a win here. But, look, it would be three in a row for Wonderboy with a victory.
In a division where Usman's fought everyone.
And that would be against Vicente Luque, Jeff Neal, and then
yeah.
the former title challenger, Gilbert Burns. Yeah, in a division where, what you just said, the champ's fought pretty much everybody and needs a fresh face.
Yeah. Like, let's just be honest. I know Leon's waiting in the wings, but if...
Who?
But that's still a rematch, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, we want another rematch. Like, I'd rather just go ahead and give me a Wonder Boy.
Look, Wonder Boy is... Let's look at his Vicente Luque fight. Luque was a beast going into that.
Yeah.
Right? He was whooping ass, a tornado in there.
Yeah.
Throwing mad strikes everywhere. And, I mean, he got pieced up 138 strikes to 77.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's with a TKO.
And didn't Wonderboy break one of his hands or something like that?
Yeah, and still pieced
or
him.
Or both his hands?
Pieced him to F like up. That. And then when he fought Jeff Neal.
He made Jeff Neal look.
171 to 85 on the strikes. I mean,
he picked Jeff Neal apart. Like, he made it, like, really see where the levels of this fight are.
Absolutely.
Like, this shit is.
And Neal was hot coming into that.
Oh, I know, yeah. He was.
Neal was super duper hot.
That's when he had knocked out Mike Perry.
So, yeah, I joke that Wonder Man, Wonder Boy is 38.
This could.
And you're right, this is his last shot. But he's got the skills here to come in. I think when you look at some of these stats here, I think they're in his favor if he can keep it on the ground, off the ground. I'm just laughing because I'm looking at your face while you're coughing, and your expression is funny.
Yeah, no, that's fucking. That's the thing is, I think if he can keep this on the feet, he's got his best chance. I think if it goes to the ground, Burns is going to tap him.
Yeah, I mean,
studies would show that if you get your back taken and let them lock their hands, you get tapped out.
In Stephen Thompson's favor, he does have about an 80% takedown defense ratio. It's like 78%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's not the guy that he used to be. That was his great weakness coming in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he showed that the most in the Woodley fights is,
yeah,
like, he was his ability to kind of have that weird battle in the clinch with Woodley and not let him get taken down was a big reason why those fights were so close.
And when you've got the situation where you've got Stephen Thompson is a striker who has learned to have a pretty good high-level defense, takedown defense. I mean, when you got 78% takedown defense and everybody thinks that's your weakness.
And you fought fucking how many times?
Right. He's got a high-level defense. Yeah. And then you've got the kind of like the opposite of him coming in with Burns, who is a grappling specialist whose hands have evolved over the years.
Yeah.
And I think that the dynamics here go in Wonderboy Thompson's favor. I think he can hold off the takedowns, and he's going to win the striking battle no matter how good Burns has gotten.
That's kind of how I view the matchup with him and Usman as well. Is like, I feel like Burns and Usman are very similar, man, and I think Wonderboy is just a bad matchup for that type of style because of the way he's in and out, in and out, in and out. Like, exactly what I was just saying. Same thing happened with Woodley. Woodley, Usman, and Burns kind of all come from the same, you know, archetype of how they fight.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They're real strong punchers when they need to be, but their grappling is what gets the job done. You know, they can throw big strikes, but where Wonder Boy has the, you know, the advantage is his range he keeps and his, how quick he's in and out, in and out. And he still does carry some pretty solid, like, freaking dexterity with his kicks. Like, he'll hit you with some weird kicks you're not going to see coming.
Absolutely. I think how he wins here will say a lot as to how he'll do against Usman. If he goes in here and just smokes up Gilbert Burns, he might be a real problem for Usman.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Imagine Wonderboy wins it on his way out. That'd be sick.
That would be pretty cool. I've always liked that dude. I make fun of him because he's so earnest.
He's so likable. He's kind of like Sage Northcutt. He's too likable.
Yeah, he's like the grown-up Sage Northcutt.
Yeah. Sage Northcutt, if he's had a little tiny bit of, you know, a little bit of sauce as well. He's a matured Sage.
Have you seen Sage lately?
He's yacked. He's
good
huge. Holy
Lord.
Shit. He's fighting light heavyweight now.
Like, I always thought he was pretty fucking humongous. Yoked, and now he's ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what that dude's been eating, but god damn, son.
Horse meat.
Are they testing over there? Does one fucking steroid test?
He passed, you know.
I'm not making accusations. I'm asking a random, unrelated question to the subject. Do they test for PEDs and such?
I don't know.
I mean, Pride didn't. Risen, I don't think they do.
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, if it's not illegal, it's not illegal. You know, I'm just saying.
Jeez.
Well, that brings us to the main sauce here on the fucking, on the cake. Mm-hmm. The icing on the cake.
Main sauce
on
the cake.
The main sauce on the cake. I don't know what I'm saying, dude. We've been smoking mad fucking shatter. Mad right, shatter, so yeah, mad wax, mad joints. I'm blazed by this point. Hope you all are, too. Yeah, here we are to the main event. Conor McGregor's return here.
Yeah.
The rematch he demanded.
Is it really a return, though? It's just a continuation.
Continuation. The rematch he demanded, like, is kind of pattern for him.
Yeah.
If he loses.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot on the line here when you're 1-1, you know. This is the decider.
Artem Lobov came out recently in an interview with, I think it was BT Sports or someone, and said that, you know, Conor, he felt in the first, and for people who don't know what that is, that's Conor McGregor's main training partner. He came out in the first, you know, fight, or second fight against Dustin, and he felt that he really was focused on the Manny Pacquiao boxing match, which was a real thing at that point, and he thought this was going to be kind of a warm-up. He's going to face another southpaw.
Yeah.
Focus was all on boxing. He's just going to smoke him like he smoked him before and move on to this big thing with Pacquiao. Mm-hmm. And that he just didn't take him seriously. And that was the result. Like, Conor did look good early. Didn't have an answer for those leg kicks.
It was his stance was so damn KO'd. Wide. It was stupid. His stance was so dumb in that fight. I thought it was just like, he just wasn't. Like, it looked like a boxer stance. Like, it was just, like, not wide. I meant, like, square. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, like, he was, like, it was weird.
Made him extra susceptible to that leg kick that Dustin was
It was very un-Conor-like. I didn't like it at all. It didn't even look like him in the cowboy fight. Like, not even on that level. Like, it was just weird.
In a cowboy fight, I was willing to chalk that up to just being evolution of his game and some new shit he was trying out is why he didn't look like normal.
No, because he threw kicks in the cowboy fight. I thought the cowboy fight, he looked like a lot more flowy than he did in the Dustin fight. I thought he looked stiff in the Dustin's fight.
He didn't look like himself at all. Yeah, I agree, as far as the Dustin fight.
Yeah.
Fucking, I don't know. I don't have a good feeling going into this. As being a huge Conor McGregor fan, openly, we both are on this show. I wouldn't be betting any money on McGregor. I hate to say it. You know, I talked back many episodes ago.
Bet the house on him, Doug.
You say bet the house on him?
Yeah.
I couldn't hear you.
Yep. This has always been his story, though. Like, it's always when you count him out and he's fucked up and it's everything, the walls have surrounded him. He always finds a way out.
I
expect him to
case,
do the same
man.
Thing.
Hope that's the case. As a fan, I'm not going to be too shocked if he comes out, gets KO'd again, and retires.
Think he retires if he does?
Most likely, yeah.
This fucking joint sucks.
Because what that means is he doesn't have the fire anymore.
Yeah.
Because you're right. He should go out there and be the Connor that could win.
So
and smoke him and have the burn, the desire in his heart, that burning fucking desire. But like I talked about so many episodes ago, I thought that shit was gone.
Yeah.
Then he proved me wrong, sort of, in, or not sort of, the Cerrone fight came out, and I was like, okay, well, maybe it is there. But then we got this weird, stiff version of McGregor who then gets fucking knocked the fuck out in Poirier.
Yeah, I wouldn't say really get knocked the fuck out.
Well, he wasn't asleep, but...
Yeah,
I mean,
like, fuck. It was more like... It was more
he was
like
clearly
got
laid out
apart.
On the cage.
Yeah, yeah.
Arms like, all askew.
Yeah, he's like, fuck.
Dude, it's like I love the guy. He's my favorite fighter. I'm, what can I say? He got fucked up. I don't think
he
has the fire. I just don't...
I'm just saying, I think people make it... seemed like it was so much worse than it was. I thought it was a very, very competitive fight up to that happened. I just thought it was in like it was just waves. It was like it early, there was that takedown, and I think when Connor got up from it pretty quickly, Dustin was like, all right, I guess we're going to have to strike. And then Connor was winning a lot of the early exchanges. But while he was winning the early exchanges, Dustin was hitting him with the leg kicks, trying to – so I feel like Dustin was like kind of almost – not, like, letting him, like, get off a lot of good offense, but, like, was leaving openings for Connor to hit him with a lot of good shots. Because early, he had him rocked. He had him rocked bad. It was at the end of the first round?
McGregor did.
Yeah. Because even Dustin said it after the fight. He said if, like, Connor – he felt like Connor was very tentative because at the end of the first round, I think it was, like, a straight left or something that he cracked him with where, like – Dustin kind of did the chicken dance a little bit, but it wasn't, like, noticeable. He was like, I feel like if he would have pressed the gas, he could have finished me there. I don't know what he was doing.
He wasn't fired up. The lead up to that fight, it was all, like, Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, you see, this time the kids are at home. The wife's at home. He's by himself.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that, man.
The press conference is Thursday, too. And him and Dustin have been spatting a little bit all over Twitter back and forth. He's calling him names. He's calling him names. Like, that's the thing with, like, people need to understand that shit talk is okay when it's, like, not getting crazy personal and shit like that. Like, people are always like, oh, well, if Connor starts doing that again, like, he's going to go down, you know, a whole terrible path that supposedly he's tried to write and all this shit. But, like, there's nothing wrong with being confident and shit-talking. Like, that's been a part of fighting since the beginning of time. There's just... it gets cringy and it gets fucking hard to watch when it gets personal.
Well, Poirier has come out and said that Connor's shit-talking in the first fight messed him up.
Fucked him up, yeah. Like, he said that he's expecting Connor to talk shit this time, though, too. So, you know, there's that...
Well, even if it doesn't do anything in Dustin's head, Connor, to me, is the type of fighter that needs that for himself, that boost, that fire he gets from talking shit.
Yeah.
Because like Nate Diaz is the same way.
Yeah.
Nate Diaz will want to shake your fucking hand before the fight. He'll knock that shit out.
Yeah.
I'm not your goddamn friend.
Yeah.
I'm about to beat your ass, bitch.
Yeah. It's,
that's what he needs to fuel his shit, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Connor
hugging
is
you
similar.
At the weigh-ins and shit like that.
Right.
Like, Connor up to maybe at least a Donald fight. Anybody puts their hands up in his face in the weigh-ins, he's smacking them out of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's over here hugging Dustin.
I mean,
like,
even
I just didn't like it.
And Connor would make it a point to find specific points of vulnerability in people to talk. It's not like it's just random shit. Like, he would research shit. Like, everybody says, "Oh, the Khabib shit talk went too far." But
it didn't at points,
let's leave that
educated
argument out of it. Yeah, that's not what I want to talk about. Let's talk about it was extremely educated. Like, he was pulling stuff out of
everywhere.
Books.
Yeah.
Like books about 9/11 that mentioned Ali in a chapter or two.
Yeah.
Like, he spoke to an investigative reporter who's been researching. Like, he was, like, it's not like he's just like, I want to beat your ass, you fat bitch. Like, he was, this motherfucker's researching shit.
Yeah.
He's finding specific needle points and then bringing them up publicly.
Mm-hmm. That shit got dark for sure.
But and then out comes the second Poirier fight, and there's none of that vibe anywhere, and maybe that played a part as well. I hope it did. Frankly,
you know where I like Connor shit talk? Give me, like, the RDA Connor shit talk, because, like, that was the greatest fucking shit talk hype fight that never happened. Like, straight up. Connor lit RDA up at that press conference, and he had nothing to say. And, like, then the fight never happened, and it was like, man, I always wanted to see. Like, I don't really want to see it now, but, you know, like, what I'm saying, like, at that time, I feel like it was great.
It would have been a great fight.
I mean, to be honest, though, it all worked out for the right in the right way, though, because I do think the build-up and the shit talk that Connor had in the Eddie fight was just priceless.
And like, we got the Diaz trilogy out of that, or Diaz future trilogy.
Yeah, duly.
Because when
dual fight, two fights, yeah. I don't know. Duology.
You know, the third's likely coming.
Yeah.
Maybe that would keep Connor from retiring as. There's the third Diaz fight. Diaz,
I don't know. I think Connor wins this fight. I think this is the one that where it just seems like he's taking it serious and everything's going in the right direction. And if he loses this fight, I think it'll say a lot more about him as far as, like, physically and where he's at, like, as a fighter. But I do think if he wins this fight, he's right back into the fire.
I hope he wins. I want nothing more than Connor to come out and smoke Dustin. I really do. I want Connor.
I don't
the
think he
does them,
though. I think this is actually a tough fight all the way through, and that Connor but just wins it in the end.
I don't have much faith in it. I think at Connor's level,
Dustin's hard to put away, man.
If you have to refocus yet again, I mean, how many times can you just keep refocusing?
That's the thing. I don't think he refocused.
I mean, he took Khabib lightly, supposedly.
I don't think I'm not saying took Dustin lightly the first time. I think that was all an Octagon time thing. I think the first fight was a lot, like, you saw a lot of the rust, like, in the first couple minutes when he did get taken down, and it was like, whoa, like, Connor's like, it almost looked like he was a little bit like, but then I saw as the rounds went along, I felt like he was like, it was a wave where he was winning the fight, and then Dustin just turned it around so fucking quick. It was just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. How the fuck? Like, he was losing the fight, and then he just, one of those leg kicks had Connor, like, buckled. And then he started worrying about getting kicked in the leg so much, he was dropping his hands and just eating fucking bombs. Like, Dustin hit him with some fucking, at least a four-piece combo, like, twice, and I was just like, what the fuck, like, what is going on, put your hands up. And he was just letting him, like, go to work, because he couldn't move ladder, like, he couldn't move left or right, all he could do was move back and forth, and he was on the cage, you know.
Yeah, that leg took way too much punishment,
way it, too much.
It amazes me, that calf kick, like, it seems so simple, yet so many people don't have answers for it.
Yep.
It seems like it has this resurgence going on in MMA right now, but yet it's not new. Yeah, this application of it to that muscle that, like, deadens the leg seems new. It's amazing.
It's one of those things, too. It's got to be hard to train because you don't want to fuck your teammates up like that. Right. It's got to be tough.
And I think Artem, I believe, brought it up that when you train for that kick in the gym, like, you have a pad that's right there.
Yeah.
So you're defending the kick, like, but you're not really feeling it when you're missing improper defense, right?
Yeah.
So if you do your defense correctly, it's not going to hit that muscle. But if you're a little bit off, it's going to hit that muscle. But in the gym, a pad is over it, so you don't really notice it. And then you go into the fight and you miss, and you start to get deadened on that fucking muscle.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing too.
That was the way he explained it, at least.
Although that was a big part of that last fight, I don't think that they should necessarily change their game plan because of a kick. He also has to be able to just not center a game plan around stopping that kick, more as get used to just getting in the cage with him and, like you said, maybe Artem or other guys, and them employing some kind of offense like that, and him naturally checking those or naturally catching them on the way in, because that's not something you're just going to be like, well, this fight, I'm just going to circle to the right and make sure he doesn't have a chance. That's just not going to happen. Those leg kicks are going to come no matter what. So your natural, like, you know, second nature response to seeing that leg kick thrown has to be to pick that up and, you know, check it, or, you know, figure out whichever way you're going to check it. And not worry about it. Like, you can't go in there like, all right, so tonight we're gonna stand wider and we're gonna, you know, step off to the right and hit them all with a bunch of stuff on the right side and the left side because we got to stay close so we can't get the kicks off. Like, all that shit shouldn't matter when you're on this level of fighting. You got to be yourself out there, and that shit has to just come second nature. You know what I mean? They need to have trained that this whole time that they've been in camp off to where their game plan is something else, but that has just become something that Connor does naturally, you know?
Hopefully that's the case. He said recently they focused 100% on mixed martial arts, no boxing bullshit.
Well, that's good.
As it should be. Let's go ahead and wrap it with the final predictions for the fight. You go ahead, Paul. What's your prediction? Who's going to win and how?
Taking Connor by knockout round 3.
You're taking Connor McGregor knockout round 3. When we figure the winner here gets a title shot. Either way, correct?
I don't think if Connor wins, he'll get a title shot.
All right.
But yeah, I do agree. There should be a title shot on the line.
As a fan, I want Connor to win. Absolutely. I'm rooting. I'm going into the fight rooting 100% for Connor. But my prediction is actually it's going to be Dustin Poirier by knockout in round 2 once again.
Again, huh?
Again in the second round, yeah. And I'm going to be sad.
I'm going to be sad. I can see that. Dustin's a fucking animal. I like Dustin. I just don't.
Well, I'm a fan of his as well. Just Connor's my favorite fighter, and but I'm just keeping it real, man. I'm rooting for him, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah.
I don't see it happening.
I can see it going either way.
All right. Well, that wraps UFC 264, which wraps our show today. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you were smoking on some fine, fine cannabis just like we were.
Yes, sir.
If you're brand new to the show, you can catch us on KLVM the Las Vegas Mix. You can catch the podcast wherever podcasts are distributed, from Amazon to Spotify to Google and everything in between. And hey, we even take video when we put that shit up on YouTube. Yes, where can they find links to all this stuff I'm talking about, Paul?
SWATME.com. Where you can head over there, click the gear button, buy t-shirts, support the podcast, and follow us on Instagram at SWAT MMA Podcast.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Peace.
Later.